Carol and Lynn said, okay, you got to introduce yourself, tell them why you're qualified. And I thought, well, okay, I have an accounting degree, an MBA, law degree, some other stuff. And then after hearing Carrie speak, I thought, well, maybe I should tell everyone instead that I fence EPE and FOIL, and I'm a fraternity dropout. So after one semester, I got blackballed. So don't ask me how that happened. That was a secret meeting I wasn't privy to. And but I would say this: after that happened, I did become very active in our campus ministry there at Oklahoma State, and in the group of people that I was, the group of people that I was with, one of the guys is now the supervisor of all the plumbers. Okay, he got his degree in management at the OU Norman campus, and so he gets to go anywhere he wants to during any of the home football games because he has his little facility maintenance badge. And I think they've got like 80 some fountains on the Norman campus, but he still wears his OSU underwear under his OU uniform. So but then another guy is the chief information officer of Seagate, the hard disk manufacturer. And then another guy's, a pretty high up guy at one of the oil companies. Well, that's all we can have because I'm out of handouts. So.
Oh. Yeah. They can share.
Oh, no.
We are apparently one per Jesus.
Okay. Nah. I think we have enough.
Okay.
If not.
You underestimated the importance.
Oh, you bet.
Maybe you need some more.
Okay. All right. Anybody else? So anyway, and then just another little side note. Does anyone know why the Philistines were interested in the bean field?
Why the Philistines were interested in what?
In the bean field. He talked about, and the one guy stood out in the middle of the bean field and whipped up on, what was it?
Eleazar.
No, it was the one after him. Eleazar.
Shema.
Yeah. Eleazar, he's the one that stood until his hand cleaved to his sword.
That's right, yeah.
And I actually had that happen to me in a fencing tournament one time. And I mean, my hand just got stuck. And it took, 5-10 minutes. I had to actually massage my fingers before I could actually get my sword out of my hand. And but the reason why the second guy was defending that bean field was because the bean field was ripe for harvest. And so the Philistines were trying to collect something that they didn't deserve, that they hadn't worked for. And so I commend you all for your efforts in standing your ground on the different campuses to make sure that Satan is not able to reap the harvest that's on the campus ministry. So, all right, let's go ahead and get started. I know that you guys really don't want to be here, especially on a Saturday morning. I mean, here we are talking about taxes. But I guess my final qualifier, after I did all those things and graduated from college and all, I was preparing my application to the IRS. And that's the closest I've ever come to being disinherited, because my mom walked in, tore up my application, and said, "No child of mine is going to work for Pharaoh." So anyway, it's like, okay, well, that settles that. Glad we had this family talk. So anyway, well, let's go ahead and we'll get started. What we want to try to do today is we're not trying to make you guys tax experts. I mean, we don't have enough time. But what we want to do is to really help you identify the basic tax issues that you're facing, and to help understand what records you do need to keep, okay, so that we can help you help your tax professional. And the reason why I say that, I know this is very much, okay, I just go get TurboTax and do it. Maybe not. This area of the law is really one of the most complex, and it requires a lot of study. I'm still learning things about it. And this area of law is also one of the most dynamic. This is a really interesting case. I'm sure you all have heard of Rick Warren, the purpose-driven life, okay? His only income from the ministry that he works at is like a $77,000 housing allowance. That's it. No other wages, no other anything, just a $77,000 housing allowance. He gets audited by the IRS. They disallow his housing allowance, and he takes them to tax court and wins. Okay? Not wanting to leave well enough alone, the IRS challenges the decision. They appeal the tax court, which, I mean, you can probably count on maybe two hands the number of those kinds of cases that each year that get appealed by the IRS, because usually they just say, you know, hey, look, we're done, okay, we're finished. But and Rick Warren's point on this was, look, you know, I can afford to pay the tax. That's not a problem. I'm out there for the little guys, because if they start disallowing all of this housing allowance, which they're entitled to, which the law says they're entitled to, then this is going to cause a lot of problems for people that aren't making as much money every year as I am. So the IRS appeals it to the Ninth Circuit. That's California. This is a court that's very sympathetic to the IRS. So what they do is they go out and they get a constitutional law, religious, something kind of expert guy to help to advise them on what they should decide. Preliminary copies of this guy's report are indicating that he's going to suggest that he says that the parsonage allowance is unconstitutional and should not be allowed. Okay? So, with a miraculous speed, I mean, like within days, Congress passes the Clergy Housing Allowance Clarification Act of 2002 unanimously. When did you ever see, and I don't know who the current, what the 2002 crop, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, all those guys were senators, ever agree on something unanimously in their life? I mean, probably in their entire careers. This was the only decision that was unanimously passed by Congress, signed into law by George Bush. With that housing allowance, basically the issues facing the tax court became moot. And so they went ahead and just dismissed the case because it didn't matter because Congress had already passed a law saying this is what it's going to be. Okay? And then also, you've got areas, this area of the law is being challenged by both the left and the right. And just recently, there was a district court which ruled that the parsonage allowance was unconstitutional. It went up to a federal appeals court, okay, their boss, and the appeals court said, well, we're not going to decide the issue of whether it's constitutional or not. We're going to say that you didn't have standing to file this lawsuit to start with. Now, here's what it takes for you to have standing. You have to start a ministry. You have to have a housing allowance. Then you get to wait for that rare, like maybe 1 in 1,000 chance for your return to get picked for audit. And then after your return gets picked for audit, then that housing allowance that you claimed needs to be disallowed, and then you have standing. But until then, you can't even challenge this law. So there's a lot going on here. There's a lot of people. I mean, if you think they were really trying to attack Obamacare, they're also really trying to attack this. And it's really difficult to keep up with it and all of that. Now, oh, I think I went one too far. Okay. Now, if you insist on going ahead and doing your own tax return, give me a call. Let me know how many weeks you need, and I will gladly provide you with that number of weeks of sermons and Bible lessons. Okay? And I would also like to remind you of the third commandment, not to take the Lord's name in vain while you're reading the IRS instructions. And also to gently remind you that while some people are called to the ministry of the gospel, There are others that are called to the ministry of accounting. Okay? Everybody has their gifts and talents. Some are better on counting on their fingers and toes than others. Okay? And other people are better at doing the one-on-one stuff in the campus ministry and doing the sermons and all that kind of stuff. So, make friends with an accountant, some type of tax professional. Okay. Now, the reason for that is, you can go to the IRS, the instructions are printed in English, Spanish, and all that kind of jazz. You might get the words right and still not have the right tune. And if you don't believe me, well, if I can ask Mr. Andrews.
Do you know that when, because I told you my dad was a minister of music, do you know that one time my dad asked me, I was like 7 years old, and my dad asked me to sing Amazing Grace in front of the whole congregation. And I did it, and I got a spanking for it. I bet you'd like to hear that story. Because see, I remember getting asked to do it, but 7 years old, I had heard that song so much, and I didn't really know what it meant, but it was boring to me, because it was just over and over, they'd sing it every week. And so when my dad said, you know, would you do Amazing Grace in front of the congregation, I knew the words, but I was kind of bored with the tune. And so, but when he got me up there, you know, I was up there, and right before I sang, I remembered that I had noticed the words to Amazing Grace would fit perfectly into my mother's favorite song, which was Ghost Riders in the Sky. So I said, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once lost and now found was blind, but now I see you. And within that 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, we know this day to sing God's praise that we first begun. Praise the Lord. Let's hear it for Jesus, the Holy Ghost Rider in the sky.
Yeah.
And so, you know how you're laughing right now. The congregation did that too. But my daddy wasn't laughing. And he kind of went over to me and he leaned down and he said, you know, that wasn't what I was expecting. So try it again. And I thought, ooh. Well, I had also noticed that the words to Amazing Grace would fit perfectly into the music of a song that I heard my grandfather play on his record player behind the barn. I didn't really know what the song was about, but it was called House of the Rising Sun. And I also knew, I thought at that moment, my mom likes Elvis, so I thought I'd throw a little of that in there too. And when my dad backed away, I said, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound, a savior as like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, never ought to see. And when my dad took a step toward me, I took a step back and I said, thank you very much. And he walked up to me and he said, one more chance. So I thought, well, maybe those versions were too slow. Because I had also noticed that the words to Amazing Grace would fit perfectly into the theme song from my favorite television show, Gilligan's Island. So I said, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found, was blind, but now I see. Was blind, but now I see.
Okay. So you might get the words right, but you might not have the... But you might not get the tune right, so... Okay. There we go. Now, basically, the special favor, the unmerited grace, that the unmerited favor that pastors in the church receive have a long history. All the, from Constantine, back in the Roman Empire, they had complete exemption. U.S. churches have had tax exemption since the very beginning, unofficially. In 1894, they received an official federal exemption. And right now, it's estimated that there's probably $300 to $500 billion just in property that are owned by ministries that are exempt from any kind of property tax. So we're talking big numbers. And when you've got the type of financial crisis that we've had since 2007, 2008, a lot of the states, a lot of the governments are looking for more ways to raise money, and this is a big bullseye that they're looking at, a big target. So the pros for the unmerited favor: it keeps the government out of church finances, it upholds the separation of church and state, and churches are deserving because they're providing a lot of social services. The cons: the other side is saying it actually violates the separation of church and state. Basically, they're working as subsidies, and that the lost tax revenue doesn't really pay for the social services that the churches are providing. And as a result of that, the clergy are caught in the middle. And basically, some of the major issues that clergy face is what to do about your income tax, what to do about your Social Security, your Medicare tax, the housing allowance, any ministry-related expenses, if you buy any commentaries, computers, cell phones, any of those kinds of things. You may actually have the need for additional retirement and disability, and now we have the health care issue as well that's added to that mix. Some of the minor issues, because oftentimes the churches are exempt from participating in the Social Security stuff, there's no unemployment benefits. And then at a state level, because it's state law, not federal law, you also get into workers' compensation issues. In Arkansas, any nonprofit, whether it's a ministry or not, is completely exempt from participating in workers' comp. So if you're driving and something happens on the job, then you don't get any workers' comp benefits. Oklahoma's a little different, but that's something that you need to check on a state-by-state basis. And then if you're a missionary, gosh, it can even get more complicated with the foreign earned income and some of the housing exclusions that they're given. And then to top it all off, you've got this interaction back and forth between a lot of the credits. You have your earned income credit, for instance, and if you don't have a lot of earned income, then you don't get the earned income credit. And so it's a big jumble trying to get all that stuff worked out. Now, first up, who qualifies as clergy? Well, here's something that's really interesting. Okay, section 107 says rental value of parsonage, and that particular section specifically mentions ministers of the gospel. Okay, that's what it says. Now the question is, does a minister of the gospel include a Catholic priest or a nun? Does it include someone that's a Christian Science practitioner or reader? I don't even know what those are, but okay. Or what about a Jewish rabbi or a cantor? And the only reason why I know about cantor is that one movie with, Neil Diamond, and his dad was the cantor in the movie, or an Ayatollah. Are those people considered ministers of the gospel? Now, I'll throw a little Supreme Court critique, the recent decision that they had with the Obamacare, when they said that you really, that when they said federal system, that also included the state systems, even though that's not really what it said, okay? So they weren't taking a very literal meaning of that term. Well, I think by the same token, you can kind of run into that as well. And really what happens is it depends upon the specific facts of the situation. What they're looking for is somebody that's duly ordained, that's commissioned, that's licensed by a religious body constituting a church or church denomination. So given the authority to conduct the religious services, perform sacerdotal functions, and if you'll click on that link, it'll pronounce it for you in case I didn't say it right, and to administer the ordinances or sacraments according to the tenets and practices of that church or denomination. So, what about a song leader? Somebody that just volunteers to lead singing. Okay? Probably not. He just gets up, does songs on Wednesday night, you know, Sunday sometime. Probably not. But is it Keith Lancaster here at Park Plaza? Yeah. Somebody that's doing that on a more regular basis, that has a more active role in that, probably so. But what about the girls' life minister? If you had a girls' life minister get up and preach a sermon on Sunday morning, you'd probably have a lot of people leaving the auditorium, and that would be really upset about that. You'd probably have a lot stay, but you'd probably have a lot that'd be upset. Well, I think what that does is that gets you back to administer the ordinances or sacraments according to the tenets and practices of that church or denomination. So that girls' life minister could lead the Bible studies for the girls, that's why she's a girls' life minister, and do all those types of things, and that's consistent. And so yes, I think the girls' life minister would be able to take a housing allowance. Deaf minister, okay? Probably. If they're paid, if they're on staff, probably so. Even though they may only be serving a small fraction of the congregation, probably so. If you're a retired minister, which I don't think there's very many here today, that's a whole special category. Come and see me later. That gets all complicated in a hurry. If you're someone that's taken a vow of poverty, again, that's a special category. And come see me, we'll talk about that. Church employees, secretary, janitor, deacon, probably not. Because you don't have the church secretary that's performing those sacerdotal functions. Okay? And same with the janitor and the deacon. Now, what about full-time versus part-time? Does it matter? It really shouldn't. It really shouldn't. But the reason why I mention it is because there was a case where the guy was a Jewish cantor. And one of the things that persuaded the court to allow that special treatment for him was that he was full-time instead of part-time. So in that case, it did, but that really shouldn't be a factor. And again, that kind of gets into the guys. This is complex. This is dynamic. You need to go find your tax professionals type of stuff. So now let's talk about income. Okay, that's the big, you know, this is income tax. So let's talk about income. Where the bean counters always start is Internal Revenue Code, what is it, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only, okay? This is where we start. This is our John 3:16, okay, section 61. Gross income means all income from whatever source derived, unless there is a special exemption. So income's income from whatever source derived, unless there's a special exemption. Now, there's a lot of tax professionals that don't understand this. So I'm letting you in on a little secret. All right? What we have is really a dual tax system. We have an income tax system, which is progressive. The more you make, the bigger your tax rate goes up. All right? Then we have our Social Security and Medicare tax system. That's a flat tax. And I'll have somebody come in and say, well, Reese, what's my tax bracket? So, well, do you really want to know? Because you're in the 25% tax bracket for income tax, but you're also paying 15.3% through your Social Security and all of that. Okay, so now we're up to 40%. And then Oklahoma income tax is 5%. So now we're up to 45%. And we haven't even started talking about all the sales tax that you pay and all the property tax that you pay and all the other tax that you pay. And it's like, well, no wonder my mom didn't want me working for Pharaoh. So, but what we have is a dual tax system. And so when you're looking at your income, that's what you have to remember, is the dual tax system. Have I emphasized that we have a dual tax system enough? Okay. Now, when you receive income, you have to decide whether it's included or excluded for tax purposes, for income tax purposes, whether it's included or excluded for Social Security, Medicare purposes. So those are two questions that we have to decide. And then, if it is included, how much is reported? Where is it reported? How do you pay it? And when do you pay it? Now, if a congregation, if a ministry pays money to a clergy person, to a minister, what type of paperwork do you get from that organization? If you get a W-2, you're an employee. If you receive a 1099, then you're an independent contractor and you're not an employee. But that doesn't necessarily mean they were doing it right. Okay? And so what we have to decide is that person, is that minister really a common law employee? And or is that person an independent contractor? And the problem that you run into, just because you say that you're an employee or just because you say you're an independent contractor doesn't mean you are. Because you can get audited 2 years, 3 years after you filed your return, and the IRS can come up with a different decision. Not only that, but in Oklahoma, we have the Oklahoma Employment Security Commission. They could come up with a decision that is completely different than the IRS. The Oklahoma Tax Commission could come up with its own decision. So just because the IRS makes a decision doesn't mean it's applicable to any of the other alphabet soup government agencies we have to deal with. All right? Now, so how do we decide if you're a clergy or whether you're an employee or an independent contractor? Well, the IRS has one vague little sentence, you know, are you ordained, are you this, are you whatever, and we have a 22-factor test that we use for other people besides clergy. But the better solution, I think, is to use the 7-factor test that the U.S. Tax Court has come up with. The first one is the degree of control exercised by the employer over the details of the work, which party invests in the facilities used in the work, the opportunity of the individual for profit or loss, whether or not the employer has the right to discharge the individual, whether the work is part of the employer's regular business, the permanency of the relationship, the relationship the parties believe they are creating. Now, let's say, for instance, you are Joel Olstein. All right? Do you think that Lakewood Church is going to fire Joel Olstein? Probably not. Okay. Now, and then which party invests in the facilities used in the work? Joel probably doesn't own that outright, but he's probably got it structured in such a way that he gets to participate in how all that's going, and he probably has a pretty good say in what buildings get bought and what buildings don't get bought. Or if Victory Christian or Oral Roberts University here in town. I think the Roberts family may still own the Cityplex Towers or have some involvement in the Cityplex Towers. Okay, but those are the types of factors that they're going to go through. And I think, quite frankly, this number 4 is going to be one of the larger ones they're going to look at, and whether or not they can hire and fire. So, but if you meet those. And the thing that you have to remember, this isn't something like if you get 4 out of 7, then you win. This isn't like the NBA playoffs. All right? I mean, they could totally you could win on all the other 6 factors, and they could just look at number 4. And they would make that decision just based on number 4. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, as a result, most of your clergy people are going to qualify as employees, even if they're part-time. They're still going to qualify as employees, even if they're part-time. Thus, the church should be issuing a W-2 reporting their salary as wages. Now, and here's where it gets a little goofy. Clergy are not exempt from taxes, but they're exempt from the withholding requirement for the taxes. So, you know, I get my pay stub every week. Here's how, or every other week. Here's how much I made. Here's how much was withheld for both my federal, my Social Security, Medicare, state income tax. None of that. As if I was a clergy person, I would have, here's your wages. And there would not be any deductions, no withholdings whatsoever. It would just be straight 100% salary. So you're not exempt from income tax, but you are exempt from the withholding requirements. Unless you have somebody like Matt, Matt Robinson here at Park Plaza. Now, what that means is that you're going to need to make your estimated tax payments yourself. You're going to need to kind of calculate, do some rough numbers, or better yet, get with your accountant and do some rough numbers and say, okay, this is how much I need to be making on my payments for my income tax. Now, as a little side note, because of this, because you are an employee, any unreimbursed business expenses that you have, and I mean, that could be, you know, a bag of Fritos that you buy for, if you buy a bunch of potato chips and soda pop, and you use that for some campus function, or I had a client that was a youth minister, you know, once a month they would have some big shindig over at their house and set up the volleyball and all that, and they'd have all kinds of food and snacks and all and stuff, but the church wasn't paying them for that. Those are unreimbursed business expenses. What that means is, if you want to claim that as a deduction, you've got to put that on a Schedule A. So again, you are now no longer eligible for the 1040 EZ, because there's no way you can do a Schedule A and have a 1040 EZ. So your return is getting more complex. Now, amounts that are not wages are any amounts that you directly receive for baptisms, funerals, honorariums, or other similar types of income. Well, guess what? Since that's not wages, that's not going on page one of your return, you now have to have a Schedule C. And with a Schedule C, that's going to be profit or loss from business. Is the name of that form. And that's going to be self-employment income. And now, again, you're not going to be eligible to file a 1040A return because your situation has gotten more complex. So let's take a look at the Social Security piece of that. Now, Social Security and disability was the OASDI, Old Age Survivor and Disability Insurance, is what that stands for. And it's insurance. That's basically what it is, and it's public insurance. So everybody's kicking in, except if you're Congress. But everybody's supposed to be kicking into that, all right? And then you also throw your Medicare and now the Obamacare stuff. So now you've got the hospital insurance. And basically, those programs are funded through the Federal Insurance Contribution Act and then the Self-Employment Contribution Act. Now, the main differences between these two: if you're an employee, you pay half of this. And your employer pays the other half. If you're self-employed, you're paying all of it. Well, I mean, come on, it's just, you know, fun with numbers, right? Because basically, at the end of the day, we're still paying for all of it. But it just depends on, this is being withheld by your employer. They're taking it out. And then this, you're having to, when you make your estimated payments, you're having to calculate this number yourself. Now, it's possible, I think I went too far. No, okay. It's possible that your ministry-related earnings are exempt, not from income tax. Remember, we've got the dual system. Not from income tax, but are exempt from Social Security and Medicare tax. But it's only available to clergy that are conscientiously object to it. That means that you don't like the idea of insurance, and especially you don't like the idea of public insurance. Now, If you don't like it because you don't like paying taxes, if you don't like it for economic reasons or other non-religious reasons, that's not good enough to qualify for the election. It has to be because of a conscientious objection. And I think some of the Amish, Quaker, Mennonite groups, and then there's some other groups, do object to it for conscientious reasons. But this is a Danger Will Robinson moment. Okay? This is an election that's supposed to be made at the time of your ordination. So if you're interns, probably you're probably okay. I'm not making that decision just yet. But once you make that election, and then this is a timing question, it's effective only once you receive permission, approval from the IRS. So you have to send in, I think, two or three pieces of paper, and the IRS sends you one of those pieces back. It's the same form three times, and they send you one back. Till you get yours back, yeah, good luck with that. And till you get your lucky piece of paper back, you can't claim that exclusion. You have to go ahead and do it as if you were not. And it's irrevocable. So this is a one-time election, one-shot deal. You can't be a minister for 10 years, then decide to make the election. You can't be in ministry, start your ministry, make the election, then 10 years later change your mind and decide you don't want to do it. This is a one-shot deal. Now, and there's a whole bunch of other restrictions on it. And if you have any other questions, and when I say other restrictions, this is where you get into some of the vow of poverty and some of the other stuff. Things start getting really weird, and some other questions as far as the timing and all this kind of jazz. But those are the highlights. Those are the highlights. Now, this decision needs to be made deliberately, thoughtfully, and prayerfully. My personal recommendation is that you not elect out of Social Security and Medicare. I'm a bean counter. I count beans. All right. The private alternatives are expensive. It's going to cost you more beans, and they're time consuming. If you lose your job, how are you going to make those premium payments? So, and then remember, old age survivor. You're a 25 year old minister. You're driving along and you get run over by the church bus. Guess what? Your family's covered. Your family's covered. And then, or maybe he's like, what was that? And they back up and run over you again. But they didn't send you to Jesus on the first time, but you're just kind of hanging on. You get disability benefits if they just run over your legs or something like that. All right. Now, and it's kind of interesting. Back when this first got started, a lot of the denominations were very much against it, but that attitude has softened. A lot of the Presbyterian denomination since 86 has a letter that they send out to their ministers encouraging them to not make that election. I think the Methodists are the same. But I think now that they've kind of seen how the system works and all, it's less of a concern. Now, my comment earlier about Matt Robinson, he's the controller here at Park Plaza, and I think what they do is, even though the clergy are exempt from having their withholdings, he goes ahead and does the exemption. And I don't blame him. You're already doing it for the church staff. You're already doing it for the secretaries and the janitors. What's one more minister? You're already having to fill out the paperwork. It's not a big deal. And just makes it easier on everybody. And believe me, we've had Baptist ministers show up with $150,000 tax problems. You don't want to be on that list. So it turns into more of a pay-as-you-go type of a deal, which doesn't hurt as much than if you have to do it four times a year. But you can enter into a voluntary arrangement with your church, and to pay it under the FICA method instead of under the SECA method. And that is my recommendation as well. Now, the dates to remember, first quarter payments. If you do want to make the payments under the self-employment method, April 15th, June 15th, September 15th, and January 15th are the dates that you need to remember for those estimated payments. Now, if you live in a state like Oklahoma, okay, another tip from your Uncle Reese, if you make a payment, because you're going to have to make a payment not only to the IRS, but you're going to have to make a payment to the Oklahoma Tax Commission. So if you make a payment in December, say December 31st, December 30th, you get to deduct that payment in that year. If you wait 15 days, then you can only take that payment the year after. So, for instance, if you're in January, December 30th, you make your payment, that estimated payment that you made for your state tax to the Oklahoma Tax Commission is deductible on your 2015 return. By waiting 15 days, you only get to deduct it in 2016. So that's the so now you don't have to make the federal return. You don't get a deduction for the federal. Just make your state payment 2 weeks early. Now, so these are the things you're going to be providing for your tax pro. Quarterly, get your most recent pay stub showing your wages and your housing allowance. At the end of the year, provide a detailed list of all the money received for other ministry-related services at your baptisms, funerals, honorarium, or book income, and book income special. Annually, you're going to provide a copy of your W-2 and your 1099s, if anyone, and you may not receive 1099s, because a lot of people, they only have to send out a 1099 if you make more than $600. So if they just pay you $500, you're not going to be getting one. Does that mean it's not income? No. Income is income from whatever source derived. You still have to report it. So provide a copy of all other income not reported above. So we're going to see how honest you are. So, all right. Now, let's talk about the parsonage housing allowance. This is probably one of the most favorable, controversial things that a clergy, that a minister is able to receive. And remember, Internal Revenue Code 61, income unless specifically included, or unless specifically excluded, guess what? It's specifically excluded. But it excludes the fair rental value of the home. Now, we have the dual system, right? It's only excluded from the income tax. It's not excluded from the self-employment tax, from the self-employment. From the Social Security and Medicare tax, unless you're retired. Remember, retired special, come see me. That's different. So, if you receive a $10,000 allowance for the housing allowance for your parsonage, you don't pay income tax on that $10,000. But when they go to calculate the 15.3% on the Social Security and Medicare, it has to be calculated for those purposes, unless you've made the election to not participate. If you've made the election and not participate, then it's excluded from there as well. Now, and this is where you want to have a tax professional with a really sharp pencil. What is included in the fair rental value? Okay, fair rental value. Does that mean that you can only rent places? Does that mean that that you can't own your own home? No. What that means is we have to calculate what the fair rental of the home is that you're paying, that you're making your mortgage payment on. So, now, if you are renting, that's fine. That's easy to determine what your fair rental value is. Okay, it's just your rent. But here's something else that can be included. You buy a new house, you pay a $10,000 down payment. That's part of your housing allowance. You can also include the entire amount of your mortgage payment. So if you make a $1,000 a month mortgage payment, and you know $900 of that's going to principal, or towards principal, $100 of that's interest, the entire $1,000 is included in that housing allowance. Also your real estate taxes and your property insurance. And we haven't stopped, we've only begun to deduct, all right? Your utilities, electricity, gas, water, trash. You have an alarm system, that's deductible. Internet, cable TV, local telephone charges, that's all deductible. That's all part of that housing allowance. Maintenance items, pest control, homeowner association dues, included. Housing allowance. Okay, furnishings and appliances. Need that new washer dryer? That's included. Because it's the housing allowance, the fair rental value of a furnished place, a furnished house. So you're not going to be sitting around on milk crates all day long. So you need to include the fair rental value of all your furniture. It can also include any structural repairs. I was talking with a minister that I knew. They had to spend $5,000 on a new air conditioner. That's part of the housing allowance. Okay? Yes, sir.
For the furnishings, that's only new. But like you're buying it, correct? It can't be the ones that are already in your house or anything, unless it's what you bought in that year.
What would be the rental value of the furniture that's in your place right now? That's the amount that you deduct.
Okay.
Not just what. Now, if you go and you buy a new sofa, so let's say you're if you were to go out to, you know, some rental place and they would say, okay, all this stuff here, we charge you $1,500 a month. Okay. So you take that, multiply it times 12, then you decide to buy a new $1,000 sofa. Add that $1,000 sofa to it. That's included in the fair rental value as well. Can I hear a hallelujah? All right. So, yeah, isn't that neat? Okay. You just got to have a sharp pencil, guys. Now, here's the tricky part. Here's the danger Will Robinson part. Your housing allowance has to be designated in advance. Now, what happens on that, what the church needs to do, the congregation, and if they've been doing it long enough, they probably do, but you want to check on it, or if you're starting your own ministry, then do make sure you do this. Say, you're going to pass a resolution saying the housing allowance is going to be, you know, $20,000 a year, and it's going to stay that way until we change our mind. So it's $20,000 a year and all future years unless otherwise provided. Now, but here's something to keep in mind. It can be amended, but not retroactive. So if you know that you're getting ready to spend $5,000 on an air conditioner, run down the board of directors and say, I need a $5,000 increase in my housing allowance because I got to replace my air conditioner. Okay? Don't come back later and say, I just spent $5,000 fixing my air conditioner. All right, because it's not retroactive. And then, but here's the warning part. If your housing expenses are below the allowance, so maybe you get a $77,000 parsonage exemption housing allowance like Rick Warren. Okay, but you could only come up with $50,000 worth of expenses. You're going to have to include that difference, that $27,000 difference, as income. So, you know, but I'd rather guess on the high side than be on the low side. Because if your actual expenses are, let's say it's reversed, your actual expenses are $77,000. But you only got a housing allowance of $50,000, then you receive no benefit. So I'd rather round up than down. Now, and again, emphasizing, the fair rental value includes your utilities and your furniture, your existing furniture, as well as what it would cost to rent your house. So, and talk about a taking two bites out of the apple. We also get to deduct your mortgage interest and your real estate taxes. So we get to include that in the fair rental value, and then also turn around and deduct those items as well. So, any questions about that? All right. Now, things you want to provide your tax pro: detailed list of your housing expenses, and provide an estimate of any future housing repairs. Also, let me mention real quick, this would probably, a lot of your utility companies have a way that you can do that averaging, so that your bill is the same for a whole year. You know, your gas bill is the same whether it's summer or winter. Your electricity bill is the same whether it's summer or winter. I would suggest that you do that, because then that would make guessing on your housing expenses a lot easier. So,
you can also call and ask the electric company and the gas company for a report on an average,
mm-hmm,
for the whole entire time, and that's usually what you're paying on that anyway.
Right.
So if you don't do that, just call them and ask for that. They'll actually give that to you over the phone or in writing.
And I know, like on our gas bill, it shows, mm-hmm, you know, how it bounces up and down. But because of the, and a lot of times they'll say, oh, and it's getting ready to go up. Well, then, if you need to go back and get your housing allowance amended, then you'll know what it's going to, just makes it the guessing easier. But annually, you need to provide a detailed list of your housing expenses, determine the fair rental value of your residence, estimate any expenses that you might have for the next year, and then inform your accountant if you're considering retirement. Because if you are retiring, if you're a retired clergy, some of the denominations will go ahead and pay a pension. You still get to take the housing allowance even when you're retired. All right. Now, let's talk about job expenses. And I'm running a little, my watch says I'm okay, but that one's a little fast. Let's talk about job expenses. Deductible expenses are considered ordinary and necessary. So who gets to decide what's ordinary and necessary? You, your tax professional, and the IRS on the slim, very slim chance that you ever get audited. Now, those expenses, and so, you know, put your thinking cap on. Those expenses could be computers, cell phones. Let's say you want to get a new iPhone 6S when they come out this fall, and it's $200 to upgrade to it. That $200 is a business expense. All right, and then the monthly cell phone expense could be deductible as well. If you buy some apps that you use, that would be deductible. Laptops, we've already got the internet expense included as the housing allowance. But if you buy some software, copy paper, maybe buy a printer, a color printer, something like that, that's all included. Now, there's several different ways to report those expenses. First off, it'd be nice if the ministry or the congregation that you were working for reimbursed you for those. So you go buy, you get a subscription, a monthly subscription of Office 365, or you buy a commentary or something like that. And some places will say, okay, you can have a $500 allowance each year. You can spend it on whatever you want. You know, it's up to you. Or we'll set you up with an account at Mardell's or someplace like that. Then that's the easiest way to do it. You just turn in your expense report, they get reimbursed. If you don't have that, then you can treat it as an unreimbursed employee business expense on Schedule A. Or you can do what I do. Well, okay. No, sometimes what we do is we'd do a cookout for church or cook ribs or something like that. And so if I go and buy $100 worth of ribs and smoke them for a church function, that's deductible. That's a charitable contribution. That's an in-kind contribution. So you can deduct something like that as well. And then Schedule C, if you're doing a Schedule C for your other ministerial income, you can take some of those expenses and deduct them as on your Schedule C as well. So if, for instance, if you're the gas that it takes you to drive to go do a funeral, or if you're doing a baptism or something like that, the mileage, that would be deductible as a business expense because it's related to that event. Now, there's a gotcha. There's always a gotcha. There's a gotcha. What you have to do is you have to figure out, because on those expenses, part of them are going to be deductible and part of them are not, because it's going to be assigned to that ministry, to that ministry income. So, quick example, you make $40,000, $10,000 of that is a housing allowance, which is not included in income. The other 30% is taxable. Then you're only going to deduct 75% of those expenses, because 25% was not taxable, 75% is taxable, so you've got to prorate your expenses accordingly. And the IRS publication 517 has some good information on that. Now, and that's an example. Basically, it's the example in that publication. Now, so annually, what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to provide a detailed list of your reimbursed job expenses, your expense reports, your unreimbursed job expenses, and any expenses that you incurred as a self-employed person. Now, here's what I recommend to a lot of people, not just clergy folks. There's a Dome accounting book that's out there, and there's also, and it's brown, it's number 600 is the weekly one. There's another one, Adams Weekly Bookkeeping book, and it's basically a week at a glance type of a deal. And so what you can do is you can keep track on your income, keep track of your expenses by week. And that's and if you want more information, I can show you how to do it. Not a problem. And then what I would recommend is that you get a dozen manila envelopes. Here's your manila envelope for January. Here's your manila envelope for February. Your manila envelope for March, April, May, on and on and on. And guess what? So you're going through your weekly book and you want to look at the receipts for March. You just go get your March manila envelope and you're done. Makes it real easy to find. So, with that, you should be able to make beautiful music with your accountant. And if you've never heard Wintley Phipps sing Amazing Grace, I would recommend that you go out to YouTube and listen to it. He has, he's actually sung for Billy Graham for over 30 years. And he's a neat guy. He has another YouTube video that says, "Yes, I walked up one day when I was 14 and I said, hi, Dad." So, but he does a marvelous, marvelous rendition of Amazing Grace. Now, and we just touched on briefly, quickly. I mean, we just slowed down just a little bit. But there's a lot of other areas that clergy need to think about. You may want to look at some other additional retirement options. I mean, do you really want to depend on Social Security for your retirement? If not, you may want to look at making some IRA contributions, maybe some other type of vehicles as well. What about disability options? One of the nice things about having your own disability insurance is that you can take that with you to wherever you're working. So that's a neat way of doing it. Book sales. If you're like Max Lucado, Rick Warren, write a bestseller book. Book sales are considered ministry income and can be exempt. Has some neat things as well. Moving expense. That is a, whenever you're moving, keep track of that moving expense. You get to take the mileage from, so if you've got two cars and you're driving from here to there, you get to take that mileage of getting the vehicles. If you have to travel back and forth a couple of times so you can find a new house or interview and all that kind of stuff, a big bunch of that's deductible. You don't get your meals while you're traveling, but you do get your lodging and some other things. So that's a big issue as well. Here's information for Campus Ministry United. Some other additional resources: IRS publication 517, tax topic 417, and then their audit guide. The Methodist Church has their clergy tax packet, and then Presbyterian Church has their information as well. And there's a book out there called 2015 Church and Clergy Tax Guide. And just do a search, 2015 Church Clergy Hammer, and you'll find it. This guy has different organizations will put their own logo on it. He has a 63-page version out there right now. There's another 81-page version, and if that's not enough for you, there's a 700-page version. But the 61 and 83-page are free, and the thing that I like about it is they actually have filled-in IRS forms. And then it also says TurboTax tip, TurboTax crashes when you do it this way, so you have to manually fix it, da 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 da. But this is a really good resource if you can find it.
I hate to interrupt, we are pressed for time.
Oh, we're done.
The next speaker is coming in now.
So, great resource.
Thank you. Sure. So, enjoy. Okay.